Welcome to In the Chains, a UK-based disc golf podcast bringing you worldwide disc golf news, what's happening in the UK scene, as well as our own progression. So buckle up and let's get started. Introducing to you your favorite podcast presenters, Bowen and Duffy. Here we go.
Here we go. Welcome back, everybody, to a brand new episode of In the Chains. I've got my second favourite co-host on the show with me tonight, Thomas Bowen. How's it going?
I can't get over the fact you're like, you change your persona just for the start and then it goes back to normal.
What? You say this every week, but it's just normal.
I've never heard you be that jolly in my life.
I always laugh, but I must admit, I don't necessarily feel like I've got a jolly persona, but...
You were miserable yesterday.
No, I was all right.
Couldn't hack it, could you?
Couldn't hack what?
Came at you from all angles and you couldn't hack it.
And you played a handicap round and still lost to me.
I beat you.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. I did one shot better than you.
All right.
I came in sixth, you came in seventh.
Yeah, but you have got about 12 shots on me.
No, I don't think I've got quite that many.
So we're talking about the, I know we talk about it all the time and nobody who's not local has no idea about it, but we played the Arrow Valley. There's like a handicap tournament that they run on a Sunday night, which is it's quite good. Mark Biddle runs it, and
chance to earn money.
Yeah, well, chance for me to give money away. And we had a go at that, and it's quite good. The first handicap tournament I played, you played one before, haven't you, or a couple before?
Two before, yeah.
Yeah, but it was nice. It was good.
I've gone from winning the first week to coming dead last the second time to this third one coming dead in the middle.
Yeah. We've had actually quite a busy week of disc golf, me and you, haven't we?
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Last weekend.
International Disc Golf Day, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we certainly... put ourselves about a bit for National Disc Golf Day.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of the listeners haven't done anything and it's disgraceful, really.
Oh, you're calling out all the listeners?
Calling out the listeners now. That's when you know a podcast is dying.
it was purely by coincidence, really. We went to play around Arrow Valley.
We just fancied a round, didn't we?
And who did we meet?
We met Paul Loss and Carl, didn't we?
Yeah, and they were doing their charity. Was it six rounds in a day?
Charity marathon, six rounds in a day. As we were saying to them on the day, we're in the best place to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Because of travelling, but they were doing their charity thing, and we just said, oh, can we jump on with you? And they were friendly enough to say yes, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of disc golf. I've never heard anybody say, oh, can I jump on? And the other people go, oh, no, I'd rather you not, or something like that. You know what I mean? Everybody's always like, yeah, fine, jump in.
I kind of wish early last summer, like last year, we'd have said no to someone jumping in, don't you?
I'll have a think who that might be. but that's what I mean. Like, we've made good... like good friendship, haven't we, with Dennis, just by saying yeah, come and join us. So it's like,
and
I think that's the beauty of disc golf, really, that you do sort of meet people, new people, and everybody just seems to be dead friendly. So that's one thing to take away for National Disc Golf Day, is like, in terms of getting new people into the sport, like there's certainly no barriers between sort of elitism in disc golf, I don't find in the US, but certainly in the UK.
On people who are lower rated than me.
Yeah, so there's like that one person that you don't like.
I set them up for you, Duffy. I set them up and you score, mate.
I'll knock them down. But it was pretty organic. We didn't plan to meet up with Carl and Paul Oss, did we?
No, we're just in the car park. We're just literally in the car park, like arguing with each other. And, we just turn around, what are you doing here? Don't we?
Yeah.
And then it clicked. So we offered them up a game of doubles, didn't we?
Yeah, we had a game of doubles. We was tied after the first after nine holes at Arrow Valley. Neither team had dropped a shot, I don't think.
No, I think we went. No one had scored a bogey.
No, and then we, because we were tired and we had a little bit of time, we thought we didn't want to hold them up, so they wanted to go on to the next course rather than play a playoff or whatever to see who won. So we thought, oh, we'll go to Gillies with them as well, and we'll have a game of doubles there and continue it. And we went there, didn't we? And we stuffed them, Bowen.
I still don't think we dropped a shot, me and you. Do you?
No. I think even the big par four, we parred, didn't we?
Yeah. I nearly scored my first ace at Gillies, which is a really hard course, with that T-bird.
Yeah.
Just sort of just turned a little bit. Turn, yeah?
Yeah.
Just turned a little bit too early, didn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, it was, we had good fun there. I actually played pretty well for Gillies. Like normally I'm terrible.
So we had a run there and we battered them. We sent them packing with the towel in between their legs.
Absolutely annihilated them. We said, even though you're doing it for charity, we're gonna have to beat you.
Yeah.
Bought our A game, didn't we?
We certainly did. We smashed him, was it by one shot or two shots?
I can't remember. It was one or two. But we thought it was going to go tits up for us because what happened on the first hold off with both our drives, you got up like rocking away thinking, yeah, I've got this. And you hit the first tree, didn't you?
Yeah, I felt confident. I felt like normally you go to Gillies and it's the first course you play, or it's the only course you play that day, and you go in, and the first shot is—it's not hard, but like with the woods around, you kind of think, "I wish I'd have had another few throws to warm up or whatever." But because we played Arrow Valley, I walked up and I was relatively confident, and it just like nose up, skied it straight into the trees, and made it like halfway down, and I was like, oh, "Bloody hell!" And then I thought, that's all right. At least we got another shot. And then Bowen landed even further away from the hole.
No, I got it closer than you. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Apologise, you did.
I got it about an extra 20 foot down the fairway. Yeah.
We played all right, didn't we? I think it's the first game of doubles that we've played together.
Yeah, I think so as well. Like,
and it was certainly interesting, and it was... How did you find? Sounds really big headed now, but I don't mean it this way. But how did it feel like playing in a sort of doubles match with somebody else that you sort of discuss shots and that sort of thing with?
Well, I felt like I'd be letting you down, but I think like you probably played the better shots, but there were times where I was actually useful, wasn't there?
You was rescuing it, yeah, yeah.
If you had a bad drive into a deep patch of rough, you know I've got a stupid shot to get us out, don't you?
Yeah, you can summer it out or something like that. I think I putted most of the ones at Gilly, didn't I?
Yes.
You were struggling with your putting on when we got to Gillies.
Yes.
And I ended up putting a lot there. But the rest of the shots, I thought it was relatively even, I thought.
I'm getting better, aren't I?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think you are. As much as, like I said before, the listeners want me to just absolutely rip, take the piss out of you. It's getting increasingly difficult now to certainly on disc golf.
Everything else you can.
Yeah,
but...
yeah. I've got plenty of ammo, but So we had a busy weekend, really.
I nearly scored an eagle on the handicap round.
He nearly scored an ace, and he nearly scored an eagle. Everybody,
I hit the chains on the eagle shot.
Nobody actually see that though, did they? So.
No, you're claiming you didn't, but you saw, like, what really didn't annoy me, but it was funny. I had that envy shot for eagle on the par four 10th, is it?
The one that nobody, yeah.
And I threw it, and I was saying this to you yesterday, you know if I've thrown a good shot because there isn't shit coming out of my mouth. I'm just like, my mouth's wide open, I'm just watching. And it just kissed the back chain. Like the back one chain, it just kissed it. I thought, everyone's going, what a shot. Ryan, who was playing with us.
From London Disc Golf.
I was going to call him Ryan Reynolds then. Ryan Gardner, it is, isn't it? It's Gardner. He's got a shot further away than me. And he scores an eagle on it. He completely steals my thunder.
Just one question on that. Well, I think everybody listening would be asking the same question. If he's further away than you, why are you throwing your shot first?
Because it's friendly, isn't it? It's
not great etiquette, though, is it, Mark, Bowen?
No, it's not. But like, it was just sort of like he had a long way to walk to his. So I just think we all got sick and lined up. And because he threw his out far right, maybe he was closer then. Maybe he was closer, but he's further right. He had to go over the OB as well.
So are you discrediting his eagle?
No, his eagle. Well, I didn't score an eagle, did I? He scored two eagles on that round and set the joint record for the course. So
I'll level with you. I did see your shot.
I saw it. You know what? I've just been humouring you because I saw you turned round watching.
Yeah, I did see your shot, but I thought, I ain't going to give him any credit.
It was a disc that I never use as well. It was my Envy, and I never use it. And it was a straight... This is what's blowing my mind the most, and we're whittling on here. We'll move on in a minute. But it was I had a narrow corridor. I knew I needed a straight shot, so I went to my bag, chose the right disc for a straight shot, and actually threw a straight shot. I chose the Envy, and I threw it how it was meant to be thrown. Now, that's the bit that blows my mind the most.
Almost 18 months in, guys. And he's
he's
managed to throw a straight shot.
Well, normally, if I choose like a stable... I've been moving to overstable discs because...
Your arm.
If I throw a putter that's like perhaps a little bit more overstable or stable, I'm gonna turn it over because of my arm speed. But if I'm throwing like a mid-range and I'm trying to power down on it, my sort of fail is throwing it on an Anheuser, so it never goes where I want to. Whereas if I power down on a more overstable mid-range or driver, if I do throw it on Anheuser, it's going to fight it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And it's probably not the right way to play because I should be correcting the issue of the Anheuser when I power down. But at the moment, it seems to be working for me.
Nice. So, we've been pretty busy. I don't think I'm going to play this much this week, to be honest, if at all.
What have you got coming up, though?
Well, the missus has gone back to work after having what seemed like forever off on maternity leave.
3 years on maternity.
It becomes a little bit more difficult. I could probably still fit one in, but we're going to the Essex Open. We're going down. Well, me and Dennis are going down early Friday morning. So the plan is to obviously fit as many rounds as we can on the Friday because it's a course we haven't played before, then play the tournament Saturday and Sunday. So it's not really that fair on the family to play more than that, but I feel like I'm just going to tire myself out if I do so.
What have you got to tell the listeners about Fridays from now on, Duffy? The big news.
What's the big news?
Semi-retired, aren't you?
Condensed hours, they call it.
What does that mean?
Well, anybody who knows me knows how hard I work, and
flat out.
They've said basically because you work so hard, then why don't you do? And a little bit extra each day for the 4 days and have the Friday off. So obviously I said...
You bit their hands off.
Yeah, basically. So that was pretty nice.
So now you've got, in theory, if the missus is at work, kids are at school, you've got every Friday, ain't you?
Yeah. The problem is, though, Dylan can't look after himself, being as though he's only one, so...
Can't you wheel him round in a pushchair?
I said this to Kay, but...
She ain't keen.
She weren't having any of it.
You've got that new trolley, actually. You could just whack him in the trolley.
Mate, look, yeah. Well, nobody knows about the trolley yet, Ben, so good job.
And was I allowed to mention it?
No.
It's too late now, I suppose.
Right, we're waffling. Let's get on. Right, so we're going to move on now to everybody's favourite section, Bowen's fake news. Take it away.
Right, so I think the biggest news we can both agree from for this week was the announcement of the European Pro Tour.
Yeah, so pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's good to see something rivaling the US a bit. Like, so there are 7 events, and I've got a list of where they are.
Well, you've got a list that you're going to read out. Now, that doesn't, on past experience, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's where the tournaments are going to be held.
They could
definitely be wrong.
Granted, 100, it doesn't 100% mean any, well, it's not worth the paper it's printed on, really, is it? So
I'm just hoping you get the countries right. Right. Go on. So where are they?
Right. So we have Denmark, April 2022.
Yep.
Sweden, May 2022. Norway, June. Good luck with this one. Tini Open in Finland, which is July. The Estonian Open. So hang on a minute. Why are the names Denmark, Sweden, Norway? Then suddenly they've got actual names. I don't get this.
No idea.
But they've got the Estonian Open in July, the Turku Open in Finland in August, then the European Pro Tour All-Star and Fuengirola Open in Spain in November 2022. Now, imagine that's going to be quite warm still. Just about, I'd say. That'd be a good one to go and watch, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be nice, yeah.
So, yeah, the good thing about the European Pro Tour is that they've announced that there's going to be minimum €5,000 payouts. So that's
pretty good, isn't it? Yeah.
It's good, and hopefully they'll get some decent names. If they can get some decent sponsors in to really up the pro purse, it'll be a good event.
I mean, I feel like us as Europeans, we can be pretty buoyed by the fact that Kristen Tanner's gone over to America and basically
whoop their ass, as you'd say in America.
Yeah, whoop their ass. And you just, somebody was, I remember somebody talking to somebody about it, and they're saying, yeah, but like, there's another two women that like beat her most weeks. And like, you feel like it must be such a good pro, like, because she was something else. She was, I watched quite a lot of her when she was over in America. And like, she was something else. So you feel like it'd be nice to get behind and like support like a European tour. And it'd be good to get like European names as more household names in disc golf.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, with the Pro Tour in America.
And it'd be nice to see a few of the Americans come over and not play on their home patch, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. And you can see if it's a case of this is successful, you can definitely see it being a case of there being sort of like almost like a Ryder Cup event and stuff like that.
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because we've got some good players over here, haven't we?
Yeah, even like a mixed Ryder Cup event or some, like, there's loads of options, isn't there? If there's money's there and it can be supported, then yeah, it's exciting stuff. I mean, my sort of persona isn't necessarily, like we said earlier, the most exciting of people talking, but I mean, fucking hell, Bone, did you watch the video of the European Pro Tour?
No, was it, why?
Well, it was like amateur hour. I mean, that's us saying that.
It's gotta be bad.
It was dreadful. It was a dreadful presentation, I thought.
But it worse than the Disc Golf Pro Tour? Because that can be pretty poor sometimes.
Yeah, it was just the bloke. I don't know who he is. I don't know if anybody else does. But, like, it was just really, like, droney. And, like, I don't know. It just wasn't, like, the sentences weren't, like...
I think we're spoiled with post-production, aren't we, basically? Yeah. We're spoiled with some this was good characters.
It was just an announcement video.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it just looked crap. But
the actual, we're spoiled with Joe Mess.
I'm fully behind.
Yes.
And hopefully there can be some way of, like, a Disc Golf Pro Tour network, like we watch the Pro Tour on. It'd be nice if there's something like that for the European Tour as well.
Well, it'll probably be on like Eurosport 7 or something, won't it?
Yeah. But yeah, so it's all moving in the right direction, which is good.
Eurosport 7 with the billiards on in between.
Billiards.
That's what they play. They're mad for it, aren't they, over in Europe?
I don't know.
You never been to a dodgy Eastern European hotel and the sports channel's got billiards?
No.
Okay, it must just be me. Right, moving on. As you've heard, like previously in our sort of intro, we played a couple of rounds with Paul Loss and Carl, who were doing their big fundraiser for Zoe's Place Hospice. Now, they've done an amazing job so far. They've raised over £1,100. So, like, and it's such a great cause.
That's isn't it?
It's amazing. Like, just, I implore you, if you haven't already donated, listeners, please just go and throw a couple of quid. Even a couple of quid will make a difference. Like, if we can get our 500 listeners all donating £2, it's £1,000 to the total.
Yeah.
Put our hands in our pockets. Like, please. It's a great cause. Many of you will have kids. Many of you will know how upset you can feel if your kid's got a cold. Just imagine these people who it would go a long way, wouldn't it, Duff, basically?
Yeah. And not only that, but the two guys doing it are really decent.
Great lads. Great lads.
So, like Bowen said, if you can, it's not too late to help out. And I'm sure any little bit would be really helpful.
Brilliant.
What else we got?
Right, Ledgestone. Did you see it? I mean, you can't help the weather. It was a what do they call it? An act of God, but it was a bit of a farce. Did you see what happened?
Yeah.
So basically, like, MPO were halfway through the round and it got scrapped because final round, it got scrapped because of lightning. Now I get lightning, it's bad. You're under trees, you're throwing discs. Although discs are made of plastic, so it shouldn't be very conductive. But that's just me being a geeky electrician. They had to stop it. Lightning strikes are bad in the US anyway, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a shame for Kyle Kline, to be honest, because he was leading the overall standings in the final round, and he was red hot after five holes. He was having a storm in, like, final round.
Yeah.
But they actually, like, reverted the standings back to the end of the third round, which is, retrospectively, is probably the fairest outcome. But you've got to feel bad for Kyle Kline because he's a young lad and he just came out and he was leading, like...
Yeah, well, he did well the last one, didn't he? Or was it the last one or the one before? And he just got sort of pipped at the end by Eagle.
Yeah.
It was Toboggan, so it was the one before the Preserve.
The Preserve or the Preserve?
Oh, yeah, whatever, that one. So he did really well there and just missed out. And then he's in the similar spot. He's doing well. He's leading on the last day. And then, buddy, it seems like it's not meant to be at the moment, doesn't it?
It is an act of God.
You'd hope it would be character building and he'd just come back stronger from all this and more resilient. And
I'd be thinking, what do I have to do?
Yeah, you're right. But also, like... It doesn't sit well with me when you've got sort of two winners. I know it can't be helped, but like it just looks naff.
Americans love a winner, don't they?
Well, I love a winner though, especially.
But they love. But if they could have five winners, they'd have five winners.
No, I don't think so. I think they would want the best. Yeah.
What? Okay. Because
I just feel, and I mean, we. I don't know if anybody listeners watched much of the Olympics, but there was like in the high jump. They both.
Oh, I like that. I did,
and they shared the gold, and I just thought, yeah,
but that's the Olympic spirit, though. That's different.
In the heat of the moment, you kind of think, oh, okay, that's fine. But like afterwards, if it was me, just because the person like I am, I'd be thinking, yes, it's not a thing. It's not. I'm not the best one, though, am I? I'm like joint best, or like
you've got a complex on that because your dad's beaten you at every single sport for the whole of your life.
It has made me a little bit competitive, I must admit. But
But I think that disc golf different, the Olympic spirit, I think the Olympic spirit won, and that's what it's about.
Did you hear the big news, though, about the tournament itself?
Where Ledgestone?
Yeah, basically Brody was criticising the disc golf pro tour.
Again?
On their handling of it, and he offered to pay extra to finish the tournament on the Monday.
No, he didn't.
But he would have. Paul would have had a chance of winning there. You like that one?
You got me there. That was really good. I thought, no, he fucking hasn't.
That is something he'd do, though, isn't it?
That's
it.
Yeah.
But not when Ricky and Calvin and Kyle were at the top.
If it was Ricky and Calvin were declared the eventual winners.
Yeah.
With Eagle in now, I'd say third. Would you say third?
Yeah.
Or would you say second?
Yeah, it don't really matter to this. Not winning.
No, he was the first loser.
Yeah. But it wasn't necessarily the same on the FBO card.
Paige absolutely walked it.
Smashed it, didn't she?
She 10 shots ahead?
11, I think. 11 shots ahead.
Okay. As my autocorrect likes to say, Mrs. Ganton came in second. Missy Gannon, that is, but it's autocorrect.
Has it always been your autocorrect that's been the issue, you think?
Oh, that must be why I make so many mistakes.
It's got to be that. It probably gets dates wrong as well. Does it change the date from the 23rd to the 24th? And
or 2017 to 2021.
Yeah.
And talking about that major mess up, Sarah Hokum actually came in third in this one.
So she won the
It wasn't the preserve, it was the
D-Glow.
Was it? Yeah, it was D-Glow, wasn't it? Yeah. So yeah, she won that like back a couple of years ago. She came in third this time, so
it's alleged the results in 2021.
Yeah, so I'm just up to date, aren't I? I've got finger on the pulse.
That's it. So what else we got? Anything?
Vanessa, our friend of the show, Vanessa Van Dyken. She was having a good weekend. A final round sort of let her down a little bit. She hit 13 over on the final round, and
yeah.
I think she was 24 over for the tournament. So she finished 28th, which is a shame, to be honest, because she was looking all right.
Yeah, she was looking all right.
And then sort of we have this weekend tournaments wise for us, we've got the Essex Open, which you're taking part in.
Correct.
B tier event sold out ages ago, but you want the points, don't you?
I need the points.
I think you're all right, and yeah,
I'm hoping I'll be all right, but I'm hoping if I can get a reasonably decent finish at the Essex Open, that should.
How many do you want? 20, 30 points?
I'm hoping if I can finish, I don't know how many is in the MA3 division, but if I can finish 5th to 10th, something around there, then that should seal the deal, I would have thought.
There you go. We'll watch you lose at the Nationals.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
And then for all the people that aren't doing the 2-day event, they can come and see me at Arrow Valley if you're involved in that. Not Arrow Valley, at Quarry Park, which is the Arrow Valley event, like the Arrow. I've called it the Takeover. I don't know what they're calling it, but it's the Arrow Valley event at Quarry Park. So if you're not playing in Essex, you could play in that one.
Nice. And you'll have your Sharpie with you to sign discs and stuff like that, won't you?
Yeah, I'll have my Sharpie, discs, babies' heads, whatever you want to bring, yeah. I'll sign it. Yeah. I think is that a Talladega Nights reference, that one? Yeah. I think he signs a baby's head in that, so that's where that is.
Very niche reference. Anything else, or is that it?
I've got a little section. It's up to you where we roll with it. I was going to do a bit of peddling, to be honest. I was going to talk about our shop.
Quickly, yeah, go on.
I think we've done all right the first week. Is it first week or is it first couple of weeks?
First couple of weeks, yeah.
I think we've done all right. We seem to be figuring out what people want, and we seem to be doing them at a decent price.
Yeah.
If you haven't already joined our group on Facebook, go and join it. It's in the change shop.
The aim is to try and get some nice premium sort of discs that you can't necessarily get in this country, and get them in people's hands at a reasonable cost, isn't it? So
I was going to say we're sort of, because if you ship one disc from America, it costs you a fortune. So trying to get them at reasonable,
and we can try and bring the cost down, can't we?
Exactly.
So so like Bowen said, just go ahead and join that in the change shop on Facebook, and we can approve you and can see what we've got up for offer.
New releases pretty much every week, isn't it?
So is that the loss?
That's the loss.
That's Bowen's fake news of the week. Okie doke. So on to the main topic. So this week we're joined by a member of the Scottish Disc Golf Association, John Bruce, just to talk about different bits and bobs that's going on. So we'll go over to the interview now. And welcome to John Bruce. So welcome to the show, Robert the Bruce. Sorry, John the Bruce. How you doing, John? All right.
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
That was a joke I was talking about.
Yeah, before, it wasn't that funny.
I didn't deliver it the best, so
never heard it before.
It's all original material on the show, anyway. So welcome. We thought, obviously, bits and bobs have been sort of going backwards and forwards the last couple of weeks. So we thought it would be nice. Certainly, like I was saying before we sort of come on air, it'd be nice because I don't know a lot of the answers to the questions that I'm going to be asking. So I think start off, what is the SDGA and what's the purpose of it?
Yeah, sure. So the Scottish Disc Golf Association is the national governing body for disc golf in Scotland, basically. We formed officially last year. However, kind of the preparation and run up to that had been going on for probably a year and a half, 2 years before that, to be honest with you, and kind of trying to kind of figure out if this was the right way to go. And it kind of came about as a result of kind of just a natural shift in terms of the way that disc golf in the UK was run. There was less of a kind of overall UK scene, if you like, as there used to be when I started playing a good 20 odd years ago now, where we had a kind of more full tour, and it was a smaller scene then. So it was the same sort of 40, 50 people going to events all across the UK. And as a result of the game growing, more events were happening in England, and so people didn't need to travel so much to play events, which is absolutely fine. But it also meant that we were having our own growth, and we started to have our own tour. And really that, and in Scotland, what that meant was that there was kind of a real drop in player base to the point where there was very few people playing at all. So a handful, less than 10 probably on a regular basis. And then kind of Seamus Scanlon, who kind of operates Reboot Disc Golf. He kind of came over and started growing the sport from his course, and then started putting on sort of smaller events, that kind of thing, as well as bigger events. And that started to grow the player base again in Scotland and get more people playing. And then we had a kind of boom over the last kind of 3 or 4 years prior to the pandemic, and felt that we needed to try and solidify that, really, I suppose, try and kind of capitalize on that and not let it just drift away like it did before. And to do that, we felt we needed much more of a presence of a governing body, a point of contact for people to go to for support in terms of building courses, whether it's trying to start a club, that kind of thing. And it makes much more sense to have that localized rather than having, with the greatest respect to the British Disc Golf Association, I think every single member of their board lives in London area.
Yeah.
And you know, they have their own kind of community that they've built, and that is mostly just for the way that that's just the way it happened, not out of any malice or anything. That's just the way that it happened, that most of that is based down south, in England, I mean, by south, not not just London.
We were saying before we came on that we're just joking, but Scotland is, especially we're in Midlands based, it's a good old jaunt away, isn't it? So you need to keep something local. So for local players, we don't know what you want up there, really, do we?
What? Yeah, so it's a bit of that for sure. And I suppose there's also a sense of ownership. So, you know, the likes of Seamus, the likes of myself, the likes of Glasgow Disc Golf Club, and various other kind of stakeholders up here have all put that effort in to grow the sport up here, and have all bought into the idea. So it helps to then push that forward and push that momentum forward, keep people interested.
One thing I would add is, obviously, if you look on the map of UDisc or disc golf courses, there tends to be quite a gap between sort of Manchester up until sort of the courses in Scotland. There doesn't seem to be that much in sort of Northern England. So I certainly get the difficulty of being able to compete for BDGA points if you do live in Scotland, purely for travel reasons, because it's, you're talking 3-4 hours minimum, really, to get to any sort of the tournaments. So I certainly get it from that point of view. But I mean, the obvious question is, why wouldn't the SDGA be able to sort of be incorporated in amongst the BDGA, which is supposedly for the British Isles? That seems like the obvious question.
Yeah, and it's a good one. I suppose part of it is down to just a different way of doing things. And it's, and I think actually the way that I saw the Scottish Disc Golf Association being able to have that independence, if you like, from and have our own governing body that works for Scotland purely, also was about how we bring Scotland back into the fold across the UK in terms of disc golf. And that was allowing, by having this association in place, we then had, up until very recently, and we continue to do, have very good, much better collaboration with British Disc Golf Association. So
you've got that one point of contact, haven't you, basically?
Exactly, yeah. So it allowed for much more, you know, and also you've got the Scottish Disc Golf Association being an independent body in the sense that it's not got its own vested interest in business or anything like that. Like, so you've got, you know, Seamus is doing his own thing. That's his business. That's his life. So that's important to him in terms of things getting in the way for that. So that can cause frictions generally. You know, Glasgow focused on Glasgow, St Andrews, whatever. So, you know, it allows us to be much more independent of all that and therefore have a much smoother relationship, generally speaking. Sometimes that doesn't always happen. And I suppose that's why it's important for us to have our own kind of our own governing body, really, because it kind of works for us. We have our own national tour. We have our own kind of player base and community. So it's about really what supports that best. And therefore, and you know, the more we can grow that, the better it would be for overall UK disc golf.
With your national tour, it's not just Scotland, though, is it? You go out... There's other places to go to, isn't there?
Generally, it's mostly in Scotland. It's Seamus that runs that tour. It's his kind of baby, and we kind of
help facilitate it.
Yeah, facilitate, basically help him plan it, run the tournaments, that kind of thing, alongside him. And yeah, it's mostly in Scotland, but we like to try and support kind of areas that looking for growth, looking for, you know, tournaments, that kind of thing. So Ireland, trying to support them, and vice versa, they support us. And the Wales thing is more come about because I, you know, Jane and Alan, who run Ferlinghery, are my family.
Okay.
Yeah, which is why I'm quite heavily involved in that, more so than I would be otherwise, probably. So that's kind of why that one came about, and we wanted to support them.
Was it you that convinced him to put a course down there? Was it?
No. I'm not sure I would have done, to be honest. it was Rich Hatton. I think it was at a convention or something, just by chance. And they came across him at one of these kind of big shows and conventions that they go to sell their stuff. And they obviously, Jane and Alan, knew that I played it, and so that was a connection immediately, and that's how they got in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so with that national tour thing, it's basically a Scottish tour, but we include, basically it's kind of a Celtic tour, I suppose, in some ways. It's kind of run in association with the All Ireland Disc Golf Association as well.
Okay, Doug.
Nice.
How many? I'm pretty ignorant, really. Like, I imagine a lot of English disc golfers are. How many sort of big courses or proper 18-hole sort of courses do you have up in Scotland?
So proper big 18-hole courses. So we've got Seamus's bit near Dunbar, which is, I think, the highest rated disc golf course in the UK at the moment.
Yeah.
And then Glasgow have got an 18 at Springburn Park, which is very good, very scorable in the right conditions, but also it's got quite a bit of teeth to it as well. Lots of
water. Is that Rachel's local course? Is it
Rachel's course will be St Andrews.
Oh, okay.
So they've got a 9-hole course on the grounds of the kind of sports part of the university at St Andrews. They've had that for decades. I think that was the place I won my first ever Open tournament when I was like 18 or something. So it's been around a long time, that one.
Just a little flex there.
Yeah, exactly. I don't get to win them so much anymore. So. There's too many players these days.
That's because of the Scottish Disc Golf Association.
That's the aim. I want to be not even in the top 50 players in Scotland. That's my dream. And then we've got Loch Tay, which is 18 holes. That's a really fun course. Further up, we just had the Speyside Open at Crang, and that's 9 holes, although I think it was designed to be 18 originally. But the 9 holes themselves are some of the best in the country, I would say. That's very fun, very, very hard. So 120, 130 meter, 40 meter par threes and stuff. So it's really
a challenge to get there. I'm screwed then.
That's true.
Yeah. And yeah, Glasgow got another 12 hole course, and then another 9 hole and a 6 hole. So they've got sort of 4 or 5 in very close proximity, which is quite nice. So that, you know, and offering a different level. So you've got that kind of 6 hole course, which is really beginner level. We've got the then the kind of next step up to 9 hole course, and then the 12 hole, which is kind of intermediate, and then the 18 being the kind of more the kind of championship one, if you like. In Glasgow, there's a course on Arran. I'm trying to remember where all the courses are now, which is an island kind of off the west coast.
That's quite far up, isn't it? Or
Arran's not too far up. It's okay. Kind of, you would, it attracts a lot of tourists from like Glasgow area, so it's not that, okay. It's not that far up. There was a course on Mull, and has been there for, you probably know a bit more about that one, because I mean that's been around for, yeah. That's probably one of the oldest courses in the country. There was, there's plenty more I'm trying to think of. There's a 9 hole one just outside Edinburgh.
Feel like you're going to be criticised if you don't mention one.
Yeah, I was just trying to make sure I get them all in.
You've got quite a few though, haven't you?
Yeah, I was going to say there's a hell of a lot, really.
Yeah, there's a lot, and considering, you know, if you like population base and geography, a lot of them are around that kind of central belt area, which is New Stirling, Glasgow, Edinburgh, that kind of area. And then we've got 2 or 3 up in the Highlands. Ace Adventures as well, which has got 27 holes, which is a mad place to play disc golf. I have to say, it's one of the strange, it's kind of like crazy golf. That's why I say it's a really, it's really like crazy elevation, all this kind of stuff. But a lot of fun to play. So yeah, there's lots of courses, which is why we can have our own tour, I suppose. If we were just playing just the same two courses all the time, it wouldn't be that interesting.
Nice.
So what's the plan for the next sort of year, couple of years then?
Well, to continue kind of as we are, really, we're trying to, one of our two major goals at the moment, for me anyway, is one is about coaching and trying to, so, you know, we've got kind of communities that are like Glasgow Disc Golf Club, for example, that have managed to get funding on the back of being able to do coaching for kids and things like that. And what we would like to do is really formalize that more so that we could formalize coaches, accredit coaches, you know, so that schools or youth clubs or wherever it is feel comfortable with these people coming in and being accredited by their national governing body, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is that a thing in disc golf at the moment, or because I haven't really looked into it?
No, so that's another thing we've been trying to collaborate with the BDJ on, because it would make sense to do so if we can. And they had a line with UK Ultimate to try and fold it into some of their stuff. But the challenging part of it is about it, it's all quite complicated in terms of how you get, you know, training courses accredited with like sporting governing bodies, so like Sport England or Sport Scotland. So it would be Sport Scotland for us, Sport England for the BDJ, for England. And that you have getting a coaching course, if you like, that gets coaches accredited, then accredited with a sporting body, it's quite a complicated process anyway. Okay. So we're trying to work on that, because that would, I think, just help us get in more places, get more frisbees in the hands of kids, basically. Yeah. Because that, you know, we'd love to see a junior division growing massively. Again, when I was a kid, you know, I was playing as a kid, as a junior, and there was a good sort of 20 of us probably around that from the little village that I'm from, the Highlands.
Yeah.
We used to travel all across the UK, and you know, just don't see that so much anymore really with the juniors on any competition. So that's a real shame. So that's a big goal. And then the other thing is trying to get the British and Irish majors off and running next year. Obviously we decided to not run it this year purely because with COVID and everything, we want it to be at its best from the start, you know.
Yeah.
And not want it to be, you know, just half-assed from the beginning. So working on that alongside All Ireland Disc Golf Association and the British Disc Golf Association as well. So that's a bit of a passion project as well that we're trying to get going.
And will that be a big tour? Will that be the main tour?
Well, that would be, I suppose you'll still have, so the idea being that we would still have the Quaker Tour, which would service Scotland, and and that kind of covers most amateur divisions, and well, it's an open tour, it covers everybody. And then the BDJ would still have its tour, cover, you know, with tournaments over England or wherever else in the UK they want to put them. And then this British and Irish Majors tour would be an elite, kind of try to be an elite tour, look, probably like 5 B tier events in Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales, for the first year anyway. And then, you know, with relatively decent payouts, that kind of thing, targeted at kind of MPO, MA1, FPO, that kind of level.
More elite level.
Yeah, I think next year is perfect to do that, because we've had such a boom in the pandemic, you know, with new players coming in, recreational level players coming, amateur level, all wanting to play events. So you're getting events selling out all the time, which is a new phenomenon for UK disc golf last kind of few years. Yeah, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. I mean, we'd be lucky, normally you would be happy getting sort of 30, 40 to an event, you know, so now struggling to close them is crazy. Yeah. So the British and Irish Majors would be more about having that, you know, almost got a two-tiered system of an elite level tour, and then a tour that can service everybody.
Is there a way to get like media there, like video or?
That's, yeah, all things that we need to kind of figure out, really. Again, that all costs money, I suppose, a lot of the time. Yeah. And it may be a year two thing rather than a year one thing. I'm hoping that the take-up's going to be good on it. And that there's going to be enough interest in it, and people like the idea. Most of the feedback I've had has been positive about it, so I'm hoping that it's going to be a good one. And you know, it's a positive collaboration amongst all of the associations within Britain and Ireland. So and that's really positive. Carry on.
I was just going to my two P's worth. Obviously, I didn't make the finals at the Quarry Park Open. So subsequently, I was sort of sat twiddling my thumbs, and I thought, well, I'm going to go and watch the MPO finals. And I really enjoyed just sat watching the better players. And I really enjoyed it. I see different lines on the courses that, I mean, I play Quarry Park all the time, so I see the lines that they were taking, which were totally different to mine. I really enjoyed it. So I definitely think, if it could get to the point where you could get sort of some spectators coming in and watching, I think that would be a really sort of big step for disc golf in the UK, especially from the pro side.
100%. And I think that's where this idea kind of is hopefully heading, is to have that kind of elite thing that people then eventually, when the sport grows to that point, the spectators are coming, you know, we can get it videoed. It can, you know, showcase the best players. Throughout the UK and Ireland, and also showcase the best courses throughout the UK, instead of it just being, you know, one tour in Scotland and Ireland and one tour in England. You've got one that kind of overarches everything. So, is the kind of idea.
I think the main problem is, and we've heard it from a few people, is outside the sport sponsors getting involved, isn't it? That's what you need, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean that would certainly. Boost the coffers and boost the kind of
ability to do what you want, really.
Yeah, that but also the exposure. That's the word I was looking for. The exposure of it as well. And that'll come. It's all going to come. We just have to be patient with it, I suppose. And just, you know, if we're putting on properly good tournaments and it's a smoothly run tour, that's, you know, word of mouth spreads as well. And so that's the first step, is making sure it's a smoothly run tour. It works well. People enjoy competing on it. People feel it's a prestigious thing. And then, you know, the sponsorships will come.
Yeah.
We've just had the Pro European Tour announced, haven't we?
Yeah. No, I saw that the other day. I suppose that's kind of a similar idea, really.
We joked earlier, but we say the European Pro Tour, but what we really mean is the Scandinavian Estonia Pro Tour.
And Spain.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have had a few more sort of areas pulled in, but I really feel like
the UK.
I mean, you see it with golf. You've got the sort of the Pro Tour in America, then you've got the European Tour over here, and that does attract biggish names. So it would be nice if we could have something like that where it doesn't pull players, the household names of disc golf, over and sort of, because I mean, not just in Scotland, well, not just in the UK, but across mm-hmm. Europe, there's some lovely courses that people don't really get to see that much. And it would be nice if we could sort of have some exposure on those, and sort of perhaps people from America think, well, I'm going to come over and I'm going to play different courses. Cause that's something like from you talking, just is something that I've been thinking about anyway, is coming up and perhaps stopping for a couple of nights and playing different courses in Scotland.
Yeah.
I'm conscious of time, John. So what one thing would be I think everybody would want me to ask is regarding the Welsh Open that was cancelled, and the Croydon Cyclone, I think it was called, being set up once that had been cancelled due to, from what I can gather, the Welsh Open turning into a tournament, but an invitational tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, my take is I'm very much, I don't know the inner workings of what the rules are in terms of the BDGA allowance of points sort of allocations and things like that. But from an outside perspective, it seems to me that the Welsh Open was going to be sort of in place. It was going to be a big tournament. There was a lot of people ready to sign up for whatever reason. I'm unsure. You probably have more of an idea, but the tournament was sort of scrapped or not scrapped, but it was postponed to next year, probably for similar reasons you said about the major tournament. Perhaps you wanted it to be the real thing. And you felt like perhaps at the moment it's not quite going to be able to deliver the high end experience that you wanted to. I would guess. Obviously there was then, so you then set up an invitational sort of tournament for certain individuals, that because of the invitational status, it wasn't going to have the BDGA points attached to it. Is that correct? And then the Croydon Cyclone, I think their argument was that they then jumped in and held the tournament on the same weekend. I think they hold a tournament on the same, roughly the same weekend most years, I believe. And I think it's to do with, I think, the grass cutting or something like that from the council, because they can't cut the grass that many times a year or something like that. A lot of the players who were depending on the BDGA points in order to be able to get into the British Championships wasn't able to, felt like they were going to lose out massively if they were not to attend the Croydon Cyclone. Yeah. So they quit the invitational to move to the Cyclone. Is all that correct?
Yeah, pretty much accurate.
So I think my very long-winded, but my question would be...
you're conscious of time a minute ago, Dustin. You just spent 10 minutes doing that.
I just wanted to get all the points out.
Do you want me to just... Why don't I just kind of explain where my thought process was with that. You're absolutely right. The Welsh Open had to be cancelled purely because we want that first big event there to be as we want it to be.
Yes.
And logistically, for a number of different reasons, it wasn't possible. That was partly due to the uncertainty over restrictions, partly due to time constraints, due to the course needing to be tested out, really, because there's a lot of new holes that have been put in to make it an 18 that haven't been tested.
In the wooded section.
Yeah, on a 45-degree angle hill.
Yes. So we have been down there and we played the original 12 holes, but we haven't had the wooded ones yet. But I've seen
so, this. Yeah, so but both the holes on the bottom bit and the hill, they really need to be tested on tournament conditions before we run a tournament there, because we don't know how long it's going to take people to get through, where the issue is going to be, people losing discs, spotters, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So we just felt that, and after further discussion, that given what we want it to be, it's probably better to try and run a smaller event with a group of people that we know have different levels of experience, different divisions, that kind of thing, under tournament conditions, helps us kind of see how it runs, see how long it takes people to get around it, that kind of stuff, get feedback on the course, all those kind of things was the plan. We're still going to do that. It's fine. The Croydon thing was is frustrating for me, because not because they're running an event on that weekend. That's that makes sense. You know, that's
it
not
was
a problem.
The BDGA points at short notice. Is that what it was?
Not even that. I mean, I took, you know, it makes sense. You know, there's a kind of void there for a lot of people, because we were only going to be taking sort of 30 to 40 people to Ferlinghetti instead of 100 odd. So there's a huge gap there for an event to play. So there's space there. The difficulty that I had with it was around communication. So I suppose where I was talking to you just there about how collaboration has been much better between SCGA and BDGA, and generally still is, little bits like that can be really frustrating, because it's not something that's new. It's something that's happened in the past and probably goes both ways, to be honest with you, prior to, you know, the SCGA even forming. And it's probably part of the reason the SCGA formed. You know, in terms of events being scheduled over each other, no communication back and forth between tournament directors or anything like that. And so I suppose where I got quite frustrated, or where we, it's not just me,
yeah.
it's a lot of us, got quite frustrated, is, you know, just no communication about that. So I know for a fact that, you know, that would have been planned. It wouldn't have just happened just like that, Croydon. There would have been some discussion about it. The BDGA would have known it was going on. I had to find out through somebody leaving, telling me that it was happening, that was invited to Ferlinghetti, you know, or giving me a heads up that it might be happening. So what would have been helpful is that they got in touch saying, you know, Welsh Open's cancelled, we know you're running this event. We're going to run it. We're hoping to have Croydon run an event that weekend instead. So then what we could have done is announced at the same time, or I could have invited people after the fact, after Croydon had filled up, so that then people had the opportunity to come. So I knew who was going to be available or more available, that kind of thing. All those kind of things would have avoided. So basically what I've been given is a logistical headache, having pretty much filled out the field and then had half the people disappear all of a sudden. Yeah. So you can understand why that would be quite frustrating.
Yeah, I can certainly understand how that would be frustrating. You put time and effort into to set up a tournament and or an invitational, and it sort of almost feels like the rug being pulled from under your feet a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, the public reaction was unwarranted. That was probably a mistake, but I think it just goes to show you the kind of the level of frustration that does exist.
Yeah,
because that's not just coming from me. That's kind of being, I'm almost channeling that, to be honest with you. And like I say, it's something that's been around for a long time.
I mean, my personal sort of view on it would be that I feel that once it become an invitational tournament, there was no sort of BDGA points available. Like you're saying, the Croydon Cyclone should go ahead.
Yeah.
The BDGA points, if there's no other sort of BDGA sanctioned tournaments on that weekend, then I can't see that as being an issue.
In terms of
the communication issue, what specifically would you have liked to have happened? Because if that tournament's on and there's BDGA points available, that would always have the same people moving from that one to the Croydon Cyclone. So, so what could possibly have been said
I wouldn't have invited the people that invited.
Right.
We could have gone around. So basically, I suppose it's courtesy to a certain extent, isn't it? It's just about letting me know so that I can, so it informs our planning for what we were trying to do. So this event is also about trying to get locals to come along and try out the course. And we're going to do a thing on the Sunday with people that are left over to help coach some locals and families and stuff like that, that come along and watch. So after we finish, so it's not just about the invitational, it's about kind of an opportunity to try and promote the sport down there. So I suppose what I would have wanted is, and what I've explained, you know, I've had discussions with the BDGA since, and sometimes you need to, you know, sometimes you need to kind of mouth off a little bit to get
it out in the open,
And then you can have the discussion, you know, and I have done, I've discussed with the BDGA and I get on very well with all of the board. They're all good guys. And, you know, just made my feelings clear that just in the future, you know, I will never do that again in terms of going public with it. But in the future, I expect them to get in touch with me if there's a potential clash happening or anything like that. It's not about the fact that they're running an event, then that's absolutely fine. It makes perfect sense. It was more about, you know, if there'd been a communication beforehand, I could have held off on inviting people at all.
You've wasted your time in a way, haven't you?
Yeah, there is an element to that. And it's like I say, it's just all could have been solved by simple communication. I suppose where the frustration comes is that I'm the one up here that is tends to beat the drum about trying to communicate more and collaborate more with the British Disc Golf Association. Let's work with them or try and work with them. And so when things like this happen, kind of derails a lot of that up here for people's kind of view of, of how things work, you know. So for me, it's frustrating on a number of levels. And so I can, and, you know, we're all human.
I understand. I think a lot of people can certainly see elements from both sides of just sort of arguments, certainly. So on a lighter note, I'm going up to me and Dennis, who is to do with In the Chains. Me and Dennis are coming up to the Caledonian Open.
Oh, nice.
And it's the first time. I mean, it's only the second time I've been to Scotland, but it's the first course I'll have played in Scotland. I'm dead looking forward to playing Blue Ball.
Starting with the best. It's,
yeah.
I work in the area, so I get to play it quite regularly after work, kind of thing, pop up to the course and play it. And I'm very lucky.
Are you going to the are you at the Caledonian Open?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I'll come and say hi then.
Yeah, definitely. We'll catch up there.
And main question is there anywhere that I can lose my discs
at Reboot? Yeah, definitely.
that's really disappointing, John.
I mean, it might not be, it won't be so bad at that time of year, but there's some bushes here and there.
Right. At least there aren't any rivers or any. Are there any rivers?
There's one small burn that you're doing well to find. Not to say that I haven't found it on occasion. But even that is, you know, depending on what the water level's like, you can usually fish your discs out of it. So
that's the problem with Felingerry, we found.
Yeah.
We don't want to go there in the winter. When did we go? We went in May.
Isn't that? Yeah.
Yeah, May, and it was the river level was low. I don't want to be going there in the winter because you will never it'll be gone, won't it, if it goes in that river.
Well, people who actually land their discs where they mean to will be all right, but
it's definitely a disc eater, Alan Gary.
Yeah. It's a wonderful course, so we loved it
as well. But well, thanks very much, John. I do appreciate you coming onto the show, and hopefully it's raised a bit of awareness as what the SDGA are for and sort of promote
and hopefully people. The other thing I should mention is often the reaction that we get when we criticize anything to do with the BGA or we have any kind of discussion that isn't about togetherness is that, you know, it's all nationalist stuff and which is, you know, lazy, I think. And hopefully this has gone some way to dispel some of those fears for people that think this is all about independence and stuff. It's just about what's best for growing the sport throughout the UK. And this is the best way to do it, in my opinion. And in our, you know, collectively in Scotland, opinion. But anyway, thank you for having me. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, John.
And we'll catch up in a few weeks at Blue Bell Woods.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, John.
Okie dokie. So, it's interesting. I got a lot from it. I went into it, like, being honest, I thought it was going to be, we don't want to be part of the English lot. And that was the impression that I've always had. Rightly or wrongly, we don't want to, British BDGA of all English, blah, blah, blah. And I thought John come across, I mean, he's part English anyway, but he come across really well, I thought. And I thought he'd give a decent representation of what they're trying to do up in Scotland. And you can see them, they had a lot of valid points that sort of, in my opinion, went along to like why they're doing it.
I'm a bit different to you. I compare you to Nigel Farage like that, whereas I'm more about inclusion and I think it's vital.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get a bite out of you there.
No.
No, I think like I always thought, and I don't want to take this the wrong way. This sounds like I am being like tribalistic. They're so far away from us here that we can't really know what they want. So it's good for them to all get together and have a voice, which they can broadcast louder, can't they, basically?
Yeah, yeah. The only thing I would like to happen is to still have that, a bit like the government do now with the divulged parliaments, where you're all under the same umbrella, the BDGA, but with like extended powers being given to
yes.
a branch in, so it's all under, all encompassing, but with like the Scottish being able to operate, or the Celtic, whatever you want to call it, being able to operate sort of underneath a globe, sort of like a British umbrella, but independently kind of thing.
And does that suggest, though, that the BDGA is perhaps wrongly named, and it should be like, you've got the ECB, which is England and Wales Cricket Board, should it be the English Disc Golf Association then?
I don't know. I like the fact that it's British because it feels more inclusive. I just feel like it would be nice if you could, that it could come to some sort of agreement that whereby you had the Scottish, the SDGA were as an umbrella of, or underneath the umbrella of the British Disc Golf Association, but with the power of being able to operate their own tour, but in a sort of bringing everything together, if that makes sense.
You heard it here first. Duffy wants the SDGA to be a puppet state of the BDGA.
Yeah, something like that.
I think that I love the idea of them trying to get something coaching-wise together.
Yeah,
I think that's crucial.
I think that's good across the board. It'd be nice because it is such an easy sport to join in with. I mean, it really doesn't cost much. You can get started, but whether it's the launch disc golf or whether it's even like a Discmania starter set and stuff, it's really not that expensive.
I'd say, carry on.
You can play, you can go to a course in a park that's free. Most people have a course relatively local, and you can just go and play it as many times as you want. It doesn't cost you a penny, except like that initial outlay of like 20-25 quid, and you feel like it's such a good sport for like to get kids into and get them outdoors, and there's tons of benefits to it, and without it costing a lot. But
there's only one problem. It's a very easy sport to get into. It's a very hard sport to master.
Yeah, but I think that's part of the attraction though, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I agree with you in terms of trying to get more, because you see them do it in America. You've got Uplay, which is trying to get discs into the hands at schools and stuff like that. But it's for the BDGA and all the SDGA is to take that step and try and get discs into youth centres and sports and stuff like that. Just on topic of that, you've seen Harry Messenger. He's gone to, like, I don't know, Beavers or Cubs and, like, helped out trying to get them.
Rainbows? Was it Rainbows?
It was
something like that.
Outing group and try and, like, sort of entice them to sort of have a go and see what they thought and stuff. And stuff
I've seen scout groups down at Arrow Valley, actually.
Yeah, just stuff like that is a really good way of getting out and about and making it a bit fun. But, yeah, so moving on then. So, yeah, it was good chat. I enjoyed tonight. Really, really good episode.
Can we do like a tabloid headline, like SDGA? Here's what they have to say.
Yeah. Well, what? I don't really know where you're going with it, but we'll have a chat off air.
Something catchy.
I think this is the type of thing we need to talk about off air, Bowen. Can I get anyone?
I like to include everyone in this. The listeners are all part of a big family.
No, it was a good episode. I enjoyed it. I don't have anything to add, I don't think. Have you got anything to add?
No, not that I want the listeners to hear.
If anybody's going to Essex Open, come and say hello.
Likewise at Quarry Park.
The chubby one in MA3, you'll find me.
And I'm the dashing, good-looking fellow playing in intermediate at Arrow Valley, at Quarry Park.
And come say hi. And other than that, just remember to keep it in the chains.
Keep it in the chains.
I worked that in quite smoothly then, I thought.
Thanks for listening to In The Chains. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you like the show, please leave us a review. Make sure to check out our YouTube channel to view our round videos and course flythroughs. And hit subscribe there too. Until next time, keep it in the chains.